Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys, how's my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. No man wants to lose his hair, but for men, it's actually quite common. And now with Hims, the solution is simple. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who got their flow back. Men, real talk. The only thing worse than losing your hair is waiting forever for it to grow back. That's why you need Hims, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple, with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatment options, so you can find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get your confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Moreno is a MAGA mistake for Black families. If Moreno is elected senator, he'll push to eliminate diversity, equality, and inclusion programs as part of the racist MAGA Republican Project 2025. We've come too far to let extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. MAGA Moreno is a mega mistake for Ohio. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. Paid for by Win Senate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Week one of the college football season is in the books, and ABC had its second most watched opening weekend on record behind only 2016, so a good start there. Obviously not a lot of great games either, so the numbers being that strong certainly point in a positive direction. Worth noting, ABC's four games all involving the SEC, granted against some pretty prominent non-conference opponents. And the interesting thing about ABC's numbers is that on Sunday, the network did quite well despite being pulled in a lot of markets from DirecTV, and that is where we will start today's Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis along with Drew Lerner. Don't forget to subscribe at the S&W podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. So DirecTV has pulled the ABC and ESPN channels and the rest of the Disney channels that nobody really cares about. I mean, maybe there's some kids out there missing the Disney channel, but I'm sure they're really just watching YouTube at this point. No sports from ESPN or ABC on DirecTV, and the NFL season starts in 2 days. We're taping Tuesday, and it starts on ESPN ABC in less than a week with Monday Night Football. But we've been down this road before. Obviously, a year ago, Charter and ESPN and ABC, that big conflict that was painted as this existential battle where Charter was willing to just, you know, exit distribution altogether and focus on its other business, its broadband business. Well, as Drew pointed out on Twitter, DirecTV doesn't have any other business other than distribution of the channels. So not really sure what they're going to be able to threaten in this scenario. Drew, I'll bring you in on that note.
Yeah, I mean, that's the critical difference between these two negotiations here. Last year, Charter had an actual threat against Disney, right? They are saying that, you know, the video business is such thin margins to begin with that they're fine pulling out altogether. They have a very lucrative broadband business to fall back on. So does Comcast. So does Verizon. So many of these other video distributors are unlike DirecTV in the sense that they are not reliant on video distribution for their bottom line. DirecTV is you know, not in that position, of course. This is why we've seen them cheerlead for Fubo during the Fubo antitrust litigation against Venue, right? DirecTV was really the only pay TV distributor coming out and, you know, releasing statements in support of Fubo. Well, that's because they're in the same boat, right? They are reliant on these content providers for their business, right? That is it. So I don't really know what DirecTV's endgame is here. They might get the same concessions that Charter got last year with, you know, being able to include Disney Plus and some of the ancillary streaming stuff into their pay TV packages, but they are not going to get what Fubo is ultimately seeking, this unbundling, this skinny bundle. That's just not going to happen. I don't see how DirecTV would be able to negotiate anything like that until ESPN actually brings their flagship properties direct to consumer themselves.
No, yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, the fact is, ultimately, it's a rock and a hard place. And the industry right now is set up in such a fashion that we're kicking the can down the road here. The problem is terminal, right? There's just no way for this system that is still the most lucrative for everyone involved. Well, maybe not the distributors themselves, but certainly for the programmers, there's just no way for it to continue. Because ultimately, one, it never worked for the consumers. That's, you know, I say the original sin was this or the original sin was that. Well, the original sin of cable was that it was exploiting consumers and it wasn't a good deal for them. And the only reason they ever used it was because they had no other option. You can't sustain a business indefinitely by, you know, taking advantage of your customers. Eventually, they're either going to grow apart, they're going to say, I have other things to do, or they're going to find an alternative because there's obviously an opening for an alternative. Really, what should have happened was they should never have allowed streaming to become a thing, right? They should have gone to Congress or something and said, you must prevent streaming from ever happening. And I'm sure they would have gotten something passed to that effect. But look, I mean, now that that option is there, now that you don't have to have HGTV through cable to watch your favorite show, now that you can watch all manner of programming on your time, on your dime, on a platform that costs $10 a month, this entire business, the business model was make people who don't care about sports pay for ESPN. What a ridiculous business model. And now, you know, obviously it's time to pay the piper.
Exactly. That is the original sin here, John. It's not that the business at large was predicated on making people that, you know, don't take advantage of every single channel in the cable bundle pay for everything. It's sports specific, right? It's that sports fans paid into these pay TV bundles with such fervor that the leagues had the leverage to charge as much as they do for these media rights, and thereby the cable channels that air these sports are able to extract maximum value from the distributors, right? There's no other content like sports out there that could get people as riled up, as upset if they have no access to it. So it is really a sports specific problem. And you're right when you say that this is a terminal issue, right? The piper is now being paid. And what's next? Well, ultimately, what needs to happen here is there has to be some sort of consumer-friendly bundle for sports fans. And ultimately, that's going to come at a price. But the question is now, how quickly do we get there and at what price point? Because right now, with the fragmentation, it's unsustainable. And I think these leagues and these media partners, they understand that you cannot keep the sports media landscape so fragmented, so difficult for consumers to navigate, because you're going to lose fans. So there needs to be a solution here, but I mean, it seems every day we stray further and further from that solution. And we don't really have something in sight here that can solve all this.
What exactly are you going to be able to do, right? From the standpoint of, okay, so we will create a circumstance where, you know, Fubo can only carry the sports. Well, then, I mean, but you know, look, Disney's already pulling some of these channels. Remember the Charter deal They pulled, I think, Freeform and FXX from Charter. Why do those channels exist? Like, I mean, that might be the outcome here, is that you just get rid of a lot of channels and maybe just go all the way down to just your sports networks. But obviously, they haven't done that yet. So there's some kind of financial penalty, some kind of negative aspect to their business if they get rid of, you know, Freeform, if they get rid of FXX, if they get rid of, if you're, you know, Paramount, CMT, or, and it's odd because obviously, I guess people are watching these channels in enough numbers to make it financially, you know, beneficial. Do I think that it makes sense that MTV is, well, not even MTV, VH1 is airing Law and Order all day? Why does it exist? Law and Order on VH1? And not at 3 o'clock in the morning, but during the waking hours. I don't get what the benefit is, but obviously I'm missing something because that would be an easy solution. It is, of course, true that if you're getting paid for channels that have no value and you are putting no investment into them and you're basically just licensing 20-year-old reruns, but you're still forcing the distributors to pay for those, that's a pretty good business model. That's just found money.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's what's happening. I don't think any of these channels command audiences that actually would, make it a financial sacrifice if you got rid of them. The financial sacrifice comes from the distributors not paying those carriage fees. John, DirecTV is obviously, it's the third biggest distributor in the United States. We have 6 days until Monday Night Football debuts on ESPN for this season. Do you think we reach a deal here in the next week before that game?
Yeah, I mean, there could be a deal before this podcast gets put out. I mean, I don't really think there's any serious aspect here. None of the discussion is like last year when you heard all the saber rattling and, oh my goodness, this is going to be the biggest thing ever. And, obviously, I'm not going to make any kind of wagers like that one Florida State fan made on Twitter, but I would expect there to be a deal done relatively soon, certainly by the time Monday Night Football airs.
Yeah, that's where I stand here. It seems like this is kind of empty threats from DirecTV. They're doubling down on the positions they've taken publicly in the past month or two, when it comes to, how these channels get distributed. And we'll see if they can force any concessions out of Disney that Disney hasn't given to other distributors. I find that unlikely. But yes, this is, like we said at the beginning of this conversation, this is DirecTV's business, right? They can't afford to go into the NFL season without one of their major media partners on their airwaves. So this will get resolved soon enough. But you got to feel bad for those diehard tennis fans subscribed to DirecTV. I feel like the US Open is getting the raw end of the deal more so than any other sports property out there, based on when all these distributor contracts come up, at least with Disney.
Yeah, well, nothing they can do about that. ESPN and ABC will have the U.S. Open until 2037 under a deal that was announced last week, so get used to it. Look, the reality is that if college football does not have the juice to keep these networks on these distributors, I mean, it's only the NFL that they will make a deal for. And, I don't know how the timing works out, if it was just specifically timed to be this time of year or not. But obviously the NFL, that'll get people to the negotiating table.
Let's move on. There was a big weekend in college football this past weekend. We don't have all of the viewership numbers because of the holiday as we record Tuesday morning, but we do have some numbers, John. So why don't you take us through? Let's start with USC LSU from Sunday night, the day before Labor Day.
Well, 9.2 million viewers, actually down from last year, but it's still 9.2 million. And given you know, given the DirecTV circumstance, that could be easily a factor in a decline like that. And you're not going to get any complaints about 9.2 million, even if the DirecTV isn't a factor. Obviously, the Sunday of Labor Day weekend, it's very strange to me that there were, you know, only one FBS game. That's, I mean, even last year when CBS had a doubleheader and it was low wattage, right? Rutgers and Northwestern and Oregon State, and, you know, obviously not a great lineup, but it still did respectable numbers. To me, you know, I honestly think that we've gotten to the point where the Sunday of Labor Day weekend should probably be a full day of college football, right? Doesn't have to be like a Saturday, but, you know, the way I see it is, why isn't there an ABC triple header? An ABC triple header, maybe Fox has a noon game, maybe CBS has one at 3:30, and top tier teams.
And why not Monday for that matter, right? Yeah. Why are we only have a Monday night game?
You know, the NFL would not allow this to happen. The NFL would not allow Labor Day weekend to occur and not have at least one game per window on Sunday and Monday.
Yeah, you're right. It seems like a huge oversight. And I guess, you know, when you think of the, you know, powers that be in college football, maybe they do have bigger fish to fry, but there's got to be some people out there that are hammering that exact point home, John. This is viewership that is being missed out on all day Sunday. Yes, to only have one FBS matchup is pretty criminal in this day and age.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just college football. A lot of properties are not taking advantage of, you know, the Labor Day weekend, right? The WNBA didn't have a national game outside of NBA TV. Labor Day weekend has really always been a very strong weekend for the WNBA. It used to be when the finals would end, but even more recently, like last season, or I guess 2 years ago, when they had a Vegas versus Seattle playoff game on the Sunday of Labor Day weekend, it had nearly a million viewers. Obviously, the WNBA was not at the level of popularity then than it is now. And, you know, I mean, it's a viewership rich day. And to me, I know ABC had the U.S. Open at 3 o'clock. ABC didn't have anything, to my knowledge, on at one. So why not put, I mean, Indiana Dallas could easily be a 1 o'clock game on ABC. So to me, there's, you know, not a full taking advantage of what is not necessarily a big out of home day like, you know, other holidays, but it's still a holiday weekend, and a holiday weekend that, because it's at the end of summer, people are obviously grilling. They might not necessarily be in home, but there are gatherings. So college football for sure, WNBA, everybody should be getting in on that Labor Day weekend action.
Totally agree. Let's rewind one day to the first Saturday of the season, full slate of games on Saturday. But let's actually start with the pregame shows, because obviously there's some intrigue going into this season with College Game Day specifically. We had Nick Saban's debut. Obviously, we've had a bit of the Pat McAfee saga involved in College Game Day. What were your overall thoughts on the new College Game Day cast and any viewership numbers from that?
Well, quite a few years ago, I used to wake up so late that sometimes game day would be over. But one of the wonderful things about age is that now I'm up well before game day even starts, so I never miss it. I'm always tuning in from the very beginning, from the horrible new rendition of Coming to Your City all the way through to the end. So
you catch the 9 a.m. hour on is it ESPN2 now?
Well, they air the whole thing on ESPN now. It's been a few years they've been doing that. It was way, way back, like Aaron Andrews still there when they were doing the extra hour at the start. But I mean, I saw it from start to finish. It's interesting. It reminded me of the social media video of LeBron and Steph and I guess maybe KD all doing their respective rituals before the game. Because it's like this big combination of disparate parts, right? These big giants who were never really worked together. You have really three completely contrasting approaches. And I thought the end of the show was very indicative of where game day is now. You have Lee Corso doing, you know, the prime Lee Corso stuff in the leprechaun getup, doing the dance. You have McAfee, who represents a completely different school of thought, completely different aspect. And then you have Saban, who really represents a completely different aspect. And Saban looked like he maybe was like, you know, like he couldn't believe where he was. I really think Saban might have had a dissociative moment there at the end. He was like, this is so much fun. And he was like, he was trying to convince himself. Like, I'm sure he was having fun, but it was weird to him. You could tell that it was weird to him. I think it's really interesting. Obviously, it's not long term, if anything, because Lee Corso was 90 years old. So he's not going to be doing this forever. It's amazing he's still doing it. And then, you know, I don't know. I mean, oil and water, McAfee and Saban. And it's not necessarily the case that just because two people are really, really different that they'll have chemistry, right? That's always been the big mistake every sitcom's ever made. You have two characters who are completely polar opposites. Doesn't mean they're going to have chemistry, right? And we'll see how it goes. I mean, we're 1 week in. You know, if it ever came down to picking and choosing McAfee or Saban, obviously they'd choose Saban. There's no question. If it ever came down, and you know, this is an opportunity to talk about the ESPN Media Day from last week, and McAfee kind of having this weird kind of moment where he's just like so upset at awful announcing or whatever. And it's, you know, there's been a lot of talk in the political arena about weird. And it's been interesting because obviously, you know, I think both sides are right. One side is saying, hey, this guy's really, really weird. And then the other side is saying, hey, you guys are pretty weird yourselves. How can you call anyone weird? And I think they're both right. I think anytime you get into the culture war arena, it makes you weird. You can't not be weird once you get into the culture war arena. And Pat McAfee is in the culture war arena. He may not want to be there, but he's there. First of all, he's on the air as a response to culture war stuff. He's there to get back the white young male demographic that a lot of people, apparently even inside of ESPN, think have been pushed away by, I don't know, like Jemele Hill, I guess, who hasn't even been there since like 2017. But there's a perception, and I'm not necessarily saying that it's incorrect, but there's a perception that ESPN pushed away that demographic with a lot of socially conscious content that certainly young men of any race really are not particularly amenable to. And so McAfee's existence on ESPN is a response to that, right? They tried it with the Barstool Van Talk, and then Sam Ponder was upset about it. They couldn't do it. And now they found it with McAfee. So McAfee being on ESPN is part of that culture war aspect. And then, obviously, his existence as this kind of, you know, Rogan-esque, like the Rogan for sports, you know, he's not, I don't want to use the word woke, but that's the only word, right? He's not woke. So, you know, that alone places him in a particular context. So he gets a lot of response from people who are, you know, not liking that trend. And that response, that criticism, right, that he also has created for himself by bringing on, you know, kind of a bit of a crackpot at this point, Aaron Rodgers, onto his show. And he's getting criticism that he never experienced before on grounds that he's probably never really even considered himself. And it's making him weird. It's making him weird. You can't be in the culture war area and not become weird. And that's a bipartisan issue, right? It's a bipartisan problem. You can't be in the culture war and not become a weird person. So I think he's becoming weird. That's what I would say.
Yeah. Well, whenever you start engaging in that type of stuff, and, you know, I think McAfee, you might be right, he was maybe dragged into it against his will, but now that he's engaging in it, it has become weird. It's kind of like you have people that I would consider, you know, normal, well-adjusted humans, right, that aren't paying attention to, you know, what, you know, the aggregators of sports media, you know, content are saying at any given point. You know, maybe they see a headline or two, but they're not really living it. And then you have, you know, the people that are in, right? And Pat McAfee has jumped into that pool, and he is paying attention to what is written about him in the media. Whereas maybe before he didn't care. He wasn't engaging in that. But it has you know, caused a bit of a weirdness that is hard to shake. And you're right, it doesn't help that he has, you know, characters like Aaron Rodgers on his show, who really like to swim in those pools. But yeah,
Rodgers is a perfect example, because maybe he was just really good at hiding it. But Rodgers got really weird. He started out,
I don't think he was good at hiding it. I think people noticed pretty quickly, right?
But Rodgers has been a public figure since the Bush administration, really, right? And
sure. Yeah, you're actually right. You're right.
He would had to have been really good at hiding it. I think people thought he was like a liberal at one point. I mean, his politics, especially with Kaepernick and all of that, were not viewed as conservative until COVID. The weirdening process, it begins at a place that is relatively normal, right? So a lot of normal people hated COVID restrictions, right? But there was a lot of intense feeling about that. So you might be a normal person, you start out, you hate COVID restrictions, and then people on Twitter are just killing you over that. And so you double down, and then they kill you more, and you double down again, and you double down, and you double down all the way until you're talking about like Sandy Hook or something, right? And, you know, do you remember the KFC double down?
Yes, I do. Unfortunately.
I think that's the most important piece of like food, the most important menu item of the past 25 years, because it encapsulates everything about society. If you double down and double down and double down and double down, eventually you're going to be eating a fried chicken sandwich with the fried chicken it's the buns. You're going to be totally out of control, right? So, to me, that's the problem. Rodgers just kept doubling down and doubling down and doubling down and doubling down. He started at a place where, even if a lot of people don't want to admit it, there were a lot of normal people. It wasn't just a bunch of kooks. There were a lot of normal people who were upset about COVID restrictions. He started out at a normal place, and then he just kept doubling down and doubling down and doubling down and doubling down. And he's a straight up RFK style kook now. And I don't think he was always that. Now, to be fair, the Sandy Hook story obviously is from the past. So obviously he had a lot of conspiratorial aspect from before then. But the man was in State Farm ads. You notice he's not in those State Farm ads anymore.
Yeah.
Because he became extremely weird.
You're completely right. You know, this conversation's gone off the rails a little bit. So let's reel it back in.
Yeah.
I'm kind of interested, John, because we're getting arguably the two most high profile coaches from both sides of, you know, college football and pro football are now going to be big media personalities this season. So we have Nick Saban, who just made his debut on game day. And in this next week, we will get Bill Belichick's debut on a whole potpourri of platforms here. Who do you think is going to kind of show themselves to be a better media personality? Do you think Belichick or Saban have the better media chops?
I mean, I would think Saban. Saban has shown charm in news conferences before. He's shown an ability to connect with people. Belichick is a lot like Popovich, where, you know, he's just, I mean, he himself is, to use that word again, a little bit weird, right? It's not everybody who shows up at a press conference in a torn hoodie. Sometimes that can be great for TV. And they'll both, from what I can tell, they'll both be very, very good at conveying information, and people will learn a lot. But if you're asking me who has a better TV presence, I would say it's probably going to be, I don't know. I mean, because maybe Nick Saban is too reserved to really let loose. And Belichick, because he is unpredictable, right? Nobody ever thought to make it political again. When he sent that letter to Trump, it didn't sound like him at all. It was shocking. It was like, Bill Belichick? And I mean, he's obviously got aspects to his personality that he doesn't show. He might be way funnier. He might be way more intense. He might be willing to say bolder things. I mean, we really don't know. Saban is maybe a little bit more of a known quantity in that way.
The one thing I would kind of push back on there, John, is Belichick has a clear desire to get back into coaching. So I think that might prevent him from being more critical or saying the more outlandish things that his personality may have a propensity for. But you're definitely right. He definitely on the spectrum of weird is quite far towards the weird side. That's not every 70 something year old man will date women 50 years their younger. In any case,
I'm quite sure that what's his name, Leo DiCaprio, for sure will be. I mean, you got to remember. I mean, Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, they've got infant children. You know, so.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. In any case, let's run through. I'm just really quickly going to run through the big games Saturday. Their viewership numbers. ABC, they opened with Georgia Clemson to 7.9 million viewers in the noon window. Then it was Miami against Florida in the Swamp. That averaged 6.6 million on ABC. That was technically the debut of the SEC on ABC franchise. And then in primetime, ABC led the way with 8.2 million viewers for Saturday Night Football. That is their more traditional window from past seasons. That was Notre Dame and Texas A&M. So, John, pretty strong numbers overall for the triple header on ABC. Any other news and notes from the viewership front Saturday?
Nothing yet. Obviously, we're taping Tuesday due to the holiday. It will be until Wednesday before any other numbers are out, unless the network's got fast nationals and want to release them. I'm not really expecting a ton. I think ABC probably took up a lot of the audience. I mean, what else was on? A few aesthetic things. I noted the CBS score bug. I don't know what they were thinking with that. One person on Twitter did say, well, you know, they're doing this for bars. They're doing this for mobile phones to be more easily readable. Probably true, but man, that font is plain and the box is ugly. It just looks older school. And it's honestly a downgrade even from the score bug they had before the score bug they had before. So I don't know what they were thinking with that. Hopefully they can get rid of that. But the most important aesthetic aspect is, of course, the SEC on ABC branding. Very interesting, right? I mean, this must be contractual. There's no way that ESPN and ABC just decided. Or if it's not contractual, the SEC was very heavily insistent upon it. Because you got to remember, the SEC on CBS seemed special because CBS had no other rights. They used the same graphics and the same music on all of their college football. So they had the same graphics and music on the Mountain West or whatever, but like CBS had no other Power Five rights. So the SEC on CBS, with its own individual logo and branding, but still same graphics and same music, it seemed special. So they're trying to make the SEC and ABC seem special. And so they have unique graphics and unique music. The music is a remaster or a recut or whatever of the previous ESPN college football theme that they got rid of to bring in their current theme about a decade ago. And it's interesting because it's old school as well. I suspect that there was some intention with using that old school theme because the SEC on CBS theme is a 1990s theme, maybe even 1980s. I mean, it goes way back. So I think there was some thought of, well, if we're going to use a different theme, let's go into the archives. I will say, there's a theme that they should have used. Chris Vanini of, I believe, The Athletic has been a big proponent of using the old ABC-specific college football theme from the 90s. And I agree with him. That would have been a much better fit for this. I do appreciate ESPN going into the archives and bringing old themes back. I'd love to see them do it with the NBA. It is a weird thing to have a different aesthetic for the SEC than for other games. And it brings in that favoritism problem. Because again, you know, CBS actually literally didn't treat the SEC differently than the other conferences. It just didn't have any other big conferences. You're telling me that the SEC is bigger than any other property you have in terms of college football. You know, this is just going to make those ACC or Big 12 or whatever kind of complexes even more significant. So I don't know about it. And I also think that it's just weird to have two different score bugs and two different theme songs for the same property on the same network. I just think that's bizarre. I'm not a huge fan of this, just from that standpoint.
All right, I think that...
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That about does it for our college football discussion. Let's move on quickly to an NFL preview because we have to talk about it. We haven't really talked about it too much on this podcast, but the A1 top headlined story of sports media this year is probably Tom Brady's debut at Fox. He will kick it off this weekend on Sunday for Cowboys Browns. That'll be the national window game. Some controversy this past week where the NFL came down and said, hey, if you are going to be a partial owner of the Las Vegas Raiders, you're not going to get the access that most broadcasters do. You're going to be limited in what you can see in the facilities. You're not going to be able to attend the production meetings. Fox has, of course, come out and said this is not going to be a big deal. Tom Brady will still be able to do his job. But it clearly it sends a signal that the NFL wants Brady to pick one or the other, ownership or broadcasting. So we have all that underlying his debut this upcoming weekend alongside Kevin Burkhardt on the Fox A team. So not to mention as well, shouldn't forget this, they will be calling a Super Bowl this year. So that This all takes on greater importance because of that as well. So, with all that said, John, what are your expectations for Tom Brady this season?
I mean, I have none. I have no idea if he's going to be good. This isn't like Romo, where you're hearing about everyone raving about his performance. They picked up Brady not because he was some kind of TV savant, but because his name is Tom Brady. That's why they picked him up. We have no idea if he'll be good. I hope for their sake that he's good. Certainly, he's not going to be able to do any of the preparation you need to do, right? And you can't pretend that that's not a problem. He's a new broadcaster, and he can't even do preparation. What exactly? I mean, what? That's absurd. Now, look, maybe you don't need the preparation. You know, maybe you can just kind of play it by ear and talk about what he sees. But every single broadcaster I've ever heard of has always highlighted how important the research is in the process. Every single one, right? Is Brady even being tutored by anybody? Because, you know, like Charles Davis would talk about how he was tutored by like Bob Rathman. Is Brady being tutored by anyone?
He's been pretty transparent about how he's reached out to other announcers, you know, Troy Aikman. He's talked to all the top announcers, it seems like, to get advice. And so it seems like he's taking this seriously. But I agree with you. I don't know how you can possibly do the job without sitting in production meetings that are, you know, super valuable to just the in-game strategy that's going on from week to week. Like, what is the game plan going to be like? And you know what? I'm a bit confused because Brady is not an owner of the Raiders yet. Do I have that correct?
No, it's just a pending application.
Yeah, okay. So I'm not sure what's preventing him, I guess, from sitting in on production meetings and
the NFL
facilities now.
Because, you know, the initial report by Seth Wickersham and ESPN said that this would happen if Brady was the owner. And then a report by the AP came out later and said, no, this is happening now because this application is in process. So, yeah, I mean, the NFL is very strict. And it's just going to be really interesting because, again, you have to have, it's like taking the test without doing any of the studying.
Even this seems like it's a half measure almost by the NFL, though, because what's preventing Brady from getting this information from Kevin Burkhart or, you know, Richie Zions or, you know, right. Rich Russo? They're all sitting in the production meetings themselves. So why can't, you know, Brady's going to get that information one way or the other.
Yeah. And, you know, if other teams are worried about Brady having that info and relaying it to people he's with at the Raiders, they might be more close to the vest talking with Burkhart and Zions and everybody else anyway. You know, it's just a very complicated circumstance all to get a name and a face and with no actual knowledge of how good he'll be. It's a big risk by Fox. I mean, it's unnecessary because they already had a perfectly good A analyst.
Yeah, this story from the past week, you know, prior to that, I would have thought Tom Brady almost guaranteed will call the Super Bowl this year. Now, there's some uncertainty. And, you know, if there were lines offered on will Tom Brady be in the Fox booth for the Super Bowl this year, I think it would probably be worth a flyer that he will not be. I mean, this seems a bit untenable to me. And for the NFL to do this so close to the season with one of its biggest broadcast partners, the one that will be airing the Super Bowl, to me, it seems like they're sending a strong message that they do not want Brady to do both. So they're going to make this a very difficult existence for the Fox A team if they try to push this through alongside with his ownership.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I was actually going to suggest that myself, that I wasn't 100% sure Brady would make it through the whole season, but it sounded kind of a crazy thing to suggest. But beyond anything else, you got to keep in mind, Brady's going to make a heck of a lot more money having a piece of the Raiders than he is from Fox. Because you can say, oh my goodness, $375 million. Well, that's not, I think it's what, 10% of the Raiders? It's a lot more money. So to me, if Brady had to choose, there's no question in my view that he'd choose to not have to fly to games every single week, not have to work, and just make passive money owning a stake of a franchise that's only going to grow in value. I mean, it's an obvious move. The only good thing for Fox is that they didn't fire Greg Olson. You know, ESPN would have like laid off Greg Olson for no reason. Fox still has him on their payroll. and they can promote him back to the number one spot at some point. I mean, you know, if he's got no hard feelings.
You want to put a percentage on it, John? I'm going to say there's a 20% chance that Brady does not make it through the season.
I think that's a little high, but I would say it's a real chance. I'm not going to put a number on it. I think that it's entirely possible he'll be bad. Like, I don't think that's...
the other thing. This is an off-ramp if he actually turns out to not be good, right? This is a very clear off-ramp. It's almost like, not to get political again, but the Biden debate early in June, right? This was if the performance is bad, we have time. We can push him out. So... maybe it's a similar vibe here with Brady and Fox.
Certainly there's a lot of possibility of this not working. I think that's a very, very possible, whether or not he makes it through a season or not.
Yeah. Okay, John, final topic for today. I know you wanted to get to, this WNBA story, with Nancy Lieberman and Cheryl Swoops. Why don't you fill me in as someone who has not really paid attention to this one, other than, a few passing headlines?
Well, Cheryl Swoops has been getting a lot of criticism for most of the year because she had some unflattering things to say about Caitlin Clark earlier in the year when Caitlin was still in college, kind of diminishing her accomplishments. And Cheryl is part of a rotation that also includes Nancy Lieberman. In terms of serving as an analyst on Dallas Wings games alongside Ron Thulin, who used to be at Turner, familiar face for some of us. Throughout the years, there's been a lot of scrutiny towards Cheryl for her perceived, agenda against Caitlin Clark. And then she didn't do the game on Sunday. This was the Fever Wings game. Cheryl didn't do it. And so Lieberman was there instead. So there was a lot of, hey, oh, wow, Cheryl can't even do a Caitlin Clark game. And then what was, I would normally just not even talk about it, whatever. But then Nancy Lieberman said on Stephen A. Smith's podcast that she did view Cheryl as having a bit of an agenda. And the fact is that now she and Cheryl have a strained relationship in large measure due to Cheryl's discussion of Caitlin Clark. So just a very interesting kind of story there. We've seen on so many occasions analysts who have a problem with a certain athlete. I mean, or a certain team. Charles Barkley, for years, wouldn't give the Warriors their due. Charles and KD, Charles and LeBron, basically Charles and all the great players of the current era. You can go back to Tim McCarver's criticism of Deion Sanders. And we all know Deion handles criticism so well. You can go back to Bill Walton and Shaq and how their relationship, I mean, all the way until Walton's death, Shaq was still disparaging Bill. So there's plenty of precedent for this. Sometimes the analyst is just giving, down the middle appropriate criticism. Sometimes the analyst has, more of a beef. But we see it all the time. We don't typically see it in women's sports. Certainly, a lot of Serena fans were never big fans of Chris Evert. And I don't mean Chris now on ESPN. I'm talking Chris on NBC at the start of Serena and Venus's careers. There was a lot of perception that the criticism was too harsh with Chris and also Mary Carrillo, Martina Navratilova. Some of that is just obviously fandom. But, also, anytime you're talking about nitpicking people who are winning, it can get to a point where people perceive it that way.
Yeah, no doubt. I didn't know any of the backstory here, but I can speak to, announcer beef more broadly. I think while you said it's not uncommon, it is pretty uncommon in the women's sporting world, right? I think it's fair to say, especially with how women's sports has ascended to new heights in the past, year, but also the past, five or so years, right? Most women analysts really champion other women athletes, especially because most women analysts were former athletes themselves. I would say, generally speaking, the tone is more positive when it comes to the analysis of women's sports. Now that's changed because I think you know, the popularity of the sport has also brought in new voices and more critical voices, and I think that's a good thing. It gets it more in line with how, you know, men's sports are covered. But the personal beefs, I think, are pretty uncommon. You know, this would be the only example I could think of. I guess you know, Everett and Williams, but I was not really around for that time on NBC. But it is an interesting dynamic, and I wonder if this is a story that will have legs.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't even put Chris Everett and Serena in that. You know, just that was just another example where I don't know how much of that was the fans kind of being a little weird about it and how much of it was real, because I don't really remember. I just know there was stuff in the air about that. You know, when all is said and done, you're right about women's sports. So often the coverage has been, wow, isn't it just nice to have all these athletes out here? Everyone's so great. And that's not really how sports is covered. And so as women's sports becomes more popular and more, you know, normal, right, to people, as opposed to this extra other thing that needs a qualifier, you're going to have more criticism, obviously. People freaked out when Carly Lloyd pointed out that the U.S. women's national team wasn't playing well. Hey, wouldn't you know it? They got knocked the heck out in like the round of 16. Yeah. It was a legitimate criticism, but people couldn't handle it. Now, I don't know that what's going on with Cheryl Swoops counts toward this, because it does seem, I mean,
that's a great example, though.
Yeah, Caitlin's season is unimpeachable, right? It's unimpeachable. She's having an incredible season. And her impact, you know, Indiana has been nothing. And I mean nothing since Tamika Catchings retired. And all of a sudden, they are one of the hottest teams. And Kelsey Mitchell, obviously, is a huge reason behind it. But obviously, there's only one big difference between this year and last. So to me, there really probably shouldn't be any criticism. Right. Like, I mean, you didn't have people going, man, Wemby, you know, I don't know about Wemby. Like, he had a great year. There was nothing to rip him for. And that's kind of, I guess, when it comes down to it, the thing that's about Caitlin, that there really should be no controversy whatsoever. He was great in college. He's frankly even better in the pros. He's had a great year. Why is there any criticism? Like, I mean, there shouldn't be any. Hey, I'm not saying that people don't nitpick other players. People nitpick Angel Reese. You know, Angel Reese, say what you want about her shooting ability. Say what you want about padding the stats. And obviously, they're leaving her in at the end of blowouts in a way that is a little Ricky Davis-like, right? But the fact is, a rookie set the all-time rebounding record in the WNBA? That's kind of crazy. And that's amazing, right? There's nothing really to nitpick there. So it's not like Caitlin's alone. But certainly, Caitlin, why would there need to be any criticism? He's done literally nothing warranting it.
All right, John, I think that's a good place to leave things. Big week coming up. We got Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, all big time football games. So an exciting time for the sports fans, an exciting time for this podcast. I will let you tee up next week and close us out.
All right, we'll be talking about all these football-related topics and much more next week on the SMW Podcast. Thanks for listening.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.